why practicing slow flight is so important to your skills and to GA's future. I'm Paul Plack, and this is Aero News. Welcome in to the Aero News special feature. Thanks for downloading us today. My guest is Bob Miller of Over the Airwaves, the journal for the proficient pilot. We like to get together with Bob on Mondays as kind of a regular thing and talk about some of Bob's observations, which sometimes are not in sync with the industry in general, about safety in aviation and how we might improve it. Bob, thanks for taking some time out today.
As always, Paul, I enjoy being with you.
Bob, you talked again in the November issue of Over the Airwaves about the value in practicing slow flight if we're going to avoid stall spin accidents. First of all, what has happened to our stall spin statistics? Have we seen any improvement there?
No, as far as I can tell, we're still looking at about one fatal stall spin accident a week on average in the United States, about 50 a year. The accident rate is not improving. It's still out there, and it's still one of the most common reasons why, unfortunately, people die in airplanes. And it's one of those types of accidents that are so incredibly easy to prevent. But it's something also that we either were not properly trained in the first place, or once trained, we have simply never gone back to revisit it. This is something that anytime I do a flight review with somebody, the first thing we always do out there is slow flight. I do it myself in my own my Cessna 210 just to get a feel for what that airplane feels like in that very, very mushy condition.
Okay, now you'd say that operating at minimal controllable airspeed is an effective way for us to enhance our overall airmanship skills. Other than avoiding stall spin accidents, what does this help us with?
Well, if we impose a standard, first of all, getting up to a safe altitude, at least 3,000 feet AGL, and operating an airplane in slow flight, job number one is to maintain altitude. So as we're endeavoring to slow that airplane down, we're constantly changing pitch, changing trim, and then some of the physics of what's going on, we begin developing more drag than lift. In order to slow the airplane down, as the relative percentage of drag versus lift increases, we find ourselves in something known as the area of reverse command or behind the power curve, so that we're now changing virtually all of the forces of that airplane in order to maintain the slow flight condition. We're adding power in order to go slower. We're changing pitch in order to maintain altitude. We're applying more or increasing amounts of right rudder pressure in order to prevent the yaw that's happening from the added power. So if you think about all of the things that are going on in an airplane during slow flight, I don't think there's any other condition that requires, other than an aerobatic routine, any other flight parameter that requires so much attention to so many different factors going on all at the same time. It's on the one hand, a very simple maneuver, but on the other hand, it's a very difficult maneuver to do properly.
Okay, now you mentioned some specific things in the newsletter that we should try as practice once we get up there to a safe altitude. And among them, you say get up, complete your clearing turns, retard the throttle, maintain heading at plus or minus 5 degrees in altitude, plus or minus 50 feet. And as the airplane slows down to flap extension speed, begin lowering the flaps and again holding precise heading and altitude. What does that teach us other than exactly how to handle a situation where we'd have to get that slow coming in?
Well, the first thing, it's affecting our something called our somatographic feelings. We're feeling what's going on in the airplane. Where we get stalls and spins occurring in the pattern, the hapless pilot is simply not aware. His body or her body hasn't begun to develop the sensitivity that recognizes an impending spin. We need to feel the mushiness in the controls. We need to feel that high pitch attitude, the sound of the reduced airflow over the fuselage. So what we're trying to do is build in a self-alerting system. One of my critics has been the Air Safety Foundation, because I have strongly advocated the requirement that all pilots should go through spin training. Over at the Air Safety Foundation, there's some argument that say, you know, since fatal stall spins occur primarily in the traffic pattern, and at that low, they're largely unrecoverable in the first place, why subject students to training that if it should occur in the pattern, it's going to be too late anyway. My answer to that, or my response to that, is anybody who has gone through genuine stall, spin, or spin training particularly will begin to feel long before that spin is about to occur exactly what it feels like, and will be able to take corrective measures long before the untrained or unspun proficient pilot will experience them.
All right, when we come back from the break, let's talk about some common mistakes made by pilots in trying to perform or practice slow flight. Bob Miller is my guest, back with more in a moment. I'm Paul Plack. You're listening to a special feature from Aero News.
Freedom through control. Cirrus has completely reinvented the personal aircraft and the entire experience of owning a personal aircraft. It's a bold new take on private aviation that we call Cirrus Flying 2.0. You set the schedule. You chart the course. You're in control.
Piperjet.
Hypersport.
Piper Match.
Global Expansion.
Meridian, Mirage, Matrix, and more.
With so much happening at Piper, how can I possibly keep up?
Get informed. Get involved at facebook.com/Piper Aircraft.
Welcome back to the Aero News special feature. Paul Plack here with Bob Miller, and we're talking today about slow flight and practicing it. Bob, you mentioned in the newsletter some common mistakes made by pilots in the performance of slow flight exercises. And I guess that in addition to just avoiding these in our regular flying, we also have to pay careful attention to them in our practice of slow flight.
Well, sure. I mean, there are basic requirements anytime we go into a changed flight regime, particularly maneuvers aloft. And one of the most common errors that we see is a failure to clear the area. We may have other traffic in close trail. What we need to do very clearly is clearing turns. Anytime we do maneuvers in our flight school, we're talking with air traffic control in addition to doing clearing turns, and we're watching traffic on our own traffic information system on the aircraft multifunction display. But we want to be sure that we're absolutely alone up there before we do any of these kinds of maneuvers. Anytime we reduce power, less power means less speed. Less speed means less lift. Less lift means an inability to maintain altitude. So probably the number one culprit in trying to perfect this maneuver is maintaining altitude or preventing a loss of altitude, so that we have to continue to add back pressure on the elevator in order to maintain a pitch attitude that'll preserve lift, and we need to be working the trim aggressively so as to relieve the pressures on the yoker stick as we do this. Then on the other hand, we may be applying too much back pressure in order to maintain altitude, and we find ourselves shooting through the top of our target altitude. Lots of yaw is being induced when we get behind the power curve, when we're adding power after the flaps are all the way out and we're adding almost full power to maintain altitude, where we have insufficient rudder input to control for adverse yaw. Other things we do is we begin to fixate on one, maybe two instruments. We may be fixating on the airspeed indicator, looking for a target airspeed, and failing to look out the window or check the other gauges or cross-reference our checks. We have to see what lowering the flaps are going to do as we, you know, affect that change in the shape of the airplane as we go through the slow flight regime. Poor power management is something, too, that we see. We're not controlling power adequately. And then just simply our inability to divide our attention between airplane control and orientation, where we're maintaining heading, maintaining altitude, maintaining airspeed, all while trying to control the airplane at the same time. Lastly, one of the things that an examiner can do, and this is good information for student pilots getting ready for a private pilot check ride. Getting into slow flight regime is something that an examiner can tell probably more so than in any other of the practical maneuvers that we do on that flight check. as to the proficiency of the pilot. We should be able to get into slow flight regime within PTS standards within a matter of just a couple of minutes, no more than that. We should not have to be fighting all of the controls and all the power in order to do this. So this is something that is very, very predictive of our overall piloting skills, that ability to fly in that slow flight regime.
All right. Now, you have specifically recommended trying to adhere to what looked to me like commercial pilot standards in practice. Does that not encourage people who maybe are not proficient to never get over chasing? I know one of the problems I had when I try to hold it too tight a tolerance is that makes me fixate.
Well, yeah, you don't want to fixate, but you want to develop a level of proficiency that goes well beyond the standard, and we try and teach that. The standard for the private practical test is so gross as to suggest that if you meet the standard, you are proficient, and that is a long way from really the truth. We should be able to maintain altitude in slow flight no more than 20, 30 feet. If we're doing it properly, assuming no turbulence out there, we should be able to hold heading within 5 degrees either side of the direction that we want to go. This is the standard that we want to achieve. You know, we all got out of grade school or high school. We could do that by getting D's and D pluses and C minuses, but that's no way to get into college. That's no way to succeed in life. We want to set the highest standard that we possibly can and work towards achieving that standard. Once we do that, then anytime we have to sit for a check ride or a test, that becomes a piece of cake. We need to take pride in what we're doing at such a level so as to be able to perform at peak performance. These are not difficult maneuvers. It requires proper training and lots of practice and lots of recurrent training to do these.
All right. Well, Bob, hopefully that's what our listeners will tackle then, is to get that practice. And we will look forward to talking to you again next Monday.
Thanks, Paul.
You can always find the latest edition of Bob Miller's newsletter, as well as the archives, at overtheairwaves.com. You've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. Find us on the web at aero-news.net. I'm Paul Platt. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.